to be joined today by Rafael Cadaris. Welcome, Rafael.
Good to be here, Samsara. And yeah, we're entering 2025 in very heavy times. We're on the eve of a takeover of the reins of power in this country by a fascist regime, you know, and Donald Trump, who's packed his cabinet full of lunatics and sadists who want to go after immigrants, the largest mass deportations in American history, attack trans people, get rid of the Department of Education. This is very serious. And we're going to be talking more about what you need to do, what we need to do to actually defeat this fascism. We're entering 2025 at a time when the system of capitalism imperialism is just fueling the climate crisis at an accelerated rate. You know, a system that is also pushing the world closer to world war on many fronts between the U.S. and Russia, between the U.S. and China, you know, the U.S. backing Israel in the Middle East, which is going on a rampage all over the Middle East, and, you know, backing a genocide. I mean, you want to talk about one thing that's wrong with this system of capitalism imperialism, and that's wrong with the United States of America? It is backing the most atrocious genocide in the 21st century. You know, I think at least 45,000 people now have officially died. But how many thousands more are buried under the rubble? You know, how many thousands more are dying every single day from, you know, illnesses, the wounds that have happened? You know, people don't have the nutrition to even be able to heal from the wounds. Children are dying of hypothermia right now. They're sleeping on the beaches in El Mawasi in southern Gaza. They're being ethnically cleansed from northern Gaza. Hospitals are being destroyed. You know, this is the crimes of this system, your government, capitalism, imperialism in America. So this year has to be a year of resistance and revolution.
That's right. 2025. We here at the Revolution Nothing Less show want to challenge you straight up from the heart to make a serious resolution, a New Year's resolution, to make one that's about something bigger than yourself. Put it on the line this year. Stand up and act with courage and defiance to act against this fascism and to inspire and challenge and wake up the millions, yes, tens of millions of people in this country who are sickened, who right now are despairing, who are demoralized, but who hate everything that Donald Trump represents and concentrates, and who can be woken up and won to resist this with the aim of defeating this fascism. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. That needs to be a slogan and more than a slogan. We need to make it real. And at the same time, we here at the Revolution Nothing Less show challenge you to dig deeply, honestly, into the nature of the system that gave rise to this fascism, capitalism, imperialism, and all the other horrors and atrocities Rafael was talking about, and the many more that could be listed, and get into the solution to this, an actual revolution. A new way that we could be living, a fundamentally different system, a whole new way to live. And here at this show, we promote, we follow, and we are fighting for you to follow the leader, Bob Avakian, who is the most important political thinker and leader on the planet today. This is a man who has dedicated his life, his heart and soul, all of his creative energies, his intellectual capacity, and his self-sacrifice over decades to fighting for revolution, to learning from the revolutions of the past, what was accomplished, how we stand on the shoulders of that experience, but also what needs to be done differently and how we could do this in the world today to bring about emancipation, not just for people in this country, but all over the world. Bob Avakian has brought forward a new framework of human emancipation. You have one life to live on this planet. You have one chance to put your mark on this future that children here and all over the world will inherit. Get serious about revolution. Learn about the whole different way we could be living. Get organized with the RevCom Core for the Emancipation of Humanity to bring this system down and bring about a whole different future. So this is our challenge to you, and we're going to get into this in today's show and all throughout the year.
Yeah, and we're going to be hearing more from Bob Avakian later on the show. But before that, we're going to be talking about a protests that we are calling, the RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity is calling for January 20th, the day that Trump is set to be inaugurated, the day that Trump is set to take the reins of power in this country and wield them to implement his fascist program, this needs to be met with a resounding no. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. We will not let you get away with this. You know, so this is something we're going to be talking about. We're going to be reading this call, but we are not waiting until January 20th to start building a resistance movement against this fascism and to start sparking and galvanizing and fighting to inspire the tens of millions of decent people in this country who hate Donald Trump and everything he represents.
We're going to share some of what the RevCom Corps has been doing out in the world, exactly as Raphael said, to get people to stand up, to model that courage. And we want to challenge you to take this up, too. I think we want to start, though, by playing an excerpt of Bob Avakian's social media message, Revolution 111, where he talks about what does it mean to actually defeat this Trump MAGA fascism.
So what does defeating this fascism actually mean? How can this actually happen? It means building and mobilizing a truly broad and determined mass movement, uniting all who can be united in rapidly and continually growing numbers all over the country, aiming to become so massive and powerful that it creates a profound political crisis such that Trump cannot govern the country and implement his fascist program. There are literally tens of millions of people who viscerally hate what is represented by this Trump MAGA fascism. Think of the massive outpouring of outrage that was called forth by the cold-blooded murder of George Floyd in 2020, and the way that, at the time, it changed the whole political situation in the country. This shows the potential for people to be rapidly mobilized on an even greater scale in sustained, determined opposition to Trump MAGA fascism, with the goal of actually defeating this fascism, as I have spoken to this here. This must begin and begin to gather real momentum before the scheduled inauguration of Donald Trump on January 20, 2025.
As BA said, this resistance needs to start now. And that's exactly what the RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity has been fighting to do.
President-elect Trump's new border czar says mass deportation efforts will begin right here in Chicago.
And we're going to start right here in Chicago, Illinois. Yeah!
There is a country of MAGA fascists who have become more and more unhinged. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America.
Attention everyone in the museum today, this is a public service announcement. We are the RevComs, and we are organizing now for a real revolution to emancipate humanity.
We won't take that fascist bull. We won't let them have the future. We won't take that fascist bull. Have a fighting new year. We won't take that fascist bull. We won't let them have the future. We won't take that fascist bull. Have a fighting new year.
We RevComs are serious, and all decent people need to be serious about actually defeating this Trump MAGA fascism.
And the aim of this protest, these actions that we're starting now and that we want to inspire you to be part of starting now, is to get out there and provoke, to inspire and to challenge the people who hate this Trump MAGA fascism to get off the sidelines and to join in protesting and defying it themselves. To be part of creating the level of massive outpouring and defiance and protest in every sphere of society that we create the level of profound political crisis such that Trump literally cannot govern this country and implement his fascist program. So this is why we've been out doing creative actions too, out at hospitals, reaching to healthcare workers, getting under people's skin, having some fun and poking fun at the fascists while being deadly serious about calling others to step forward.
RFK, what do you say?
RFK, what do you say?
Polio is the way.
Why?
We are the people
too. A little bit louder, free. We want
measles
for the children.
Drink raw milk, strengthen flu.
I don't care what happens to you.
Hepatitis, meningitis, let's all die of coronavirus.
I believe
the children are our future. Give them polio and let them die.
I don't believe germs cause disease.
My opinion trumps scientific expertise. What do we want?
The dark ages.
When do we want it?
Now.
We want measles for the children.
What we have been doing today is satire. All jokes aside, this is deadly serious. This anti-science has a body count, and we will not go back to the good old days.
That's right.
When children died of polio and measles and whooping cough and diphtheria. The good old days of open white supremacy and misogyny. This is what Donald Trump means when he says making America great again. Yes, Donald Trump has put an anti-scientific lunatic, RFK Jr., in charge of public health in this country. RFK Jr., who opposes all vaccines. RFK Jr., whose lawyer filed a lawsuit to revoke FDA approval for the polio vaccine. Think about that. Polio, which killed and maimed and paralyzed thousands of children every single year. You know what stopped that? Vaccines. But for fascists like Donald Trump, anti-scientific lunacy is part of their program. They want people not understanding how the world works. They want people not knowing how to think critically because it makes them easier to manipulate. It makes them easier to forge as foot soldiers for a white Christian fascist America. We have to stop this. And yes, there is a vaccine for fascism in this country. That vaccine is mass resistance in the streets. And yes, there is a vaccine for capitalism imperialism. It is called revolution and the new communism developed by Bob Avakian.
Seriously, though, when this kind of satire is indistinguishable from the reality that people like RFK Jr. are promising, it's time to come off the sidelines and join us in this fight.
And one of the most important lessons that's been summed up from the rise of fascism in Nazi Germany and in other places is that you have to come to the defense of those who are targeted first by fascism. And Trump has made very clear that he is going to go, starting day one, like a hammer after immigrants, with massive roundups, potentially a national state of emergency, potentially unleashing the military, deportations on a scale that has never happened, and outright terror against immigrants. So it's extremely important that this be countered, starting now and day one, as part of rallying people to defeat this fascism as a whole. And I want to couple this with something else that has come up, because both of these points I'm making about coming to the defense of those under attack first and the divisions among the rulers play into what we're about to show. A lot of people tell us, RevComs, well, you make a big deal about Trump being a fascist and MAGA being fascist, but they're all part of the ruling class. And it's true. The Democrats are also war criminals. They're also climate destroyers. They're also part of the capitalist imperialist system, but they're not all the same. And even on this question of immigration, as much as they're both vicious towards the immigrants, there are divisions here. And I think you should talk some about how these divisions played into what we're about to show.
Yeah, so we're going to watch some footage from a protest that we did last week in San Diego. And the reason that we went down to San Diego is because the County Board of Supervisors there recently passed a new sanctuary policy saying that they will not comply with ICE, with federal immigration authorities. They won't turn over immigrants, undocumented immigrants, to ICE at the jails. So this is really important. But the sheriff's response to this was to basically say, you, we're going to keep on, you know, turning immigrants over to ICE from the jails that we run. So, you know, basically an open violation of the Board of Supervisors, but also in flagrant violation of state law in California, which says that law enforcement actually has to comply with sanctuary policies in local areas.
So we went down to San Diego both to rally and stand up against this fascist terror against immigrants, but also with the recognition that the more that masses stand up, the more that there's pressure from below demanding an end to this fascist onslaught, the more these kinds of divisions we're talking about among the rulers can come into play in a favorable way towards creating the kind of all-out profound political crisis that can stop this fascism from being implemented.
Round up the sheriff!
Round up the sheriff!
Not the immigrants!
Not the immigrants!
Today, a handful of protesters rallied in front of the downtown jail calling for the sheriff's department not to comply with the incoming Trump administration's immigration policy. Trump is vowing to implement the largest mass deportation operation ever. Today's protesters are calling for people to literally stand in the way.
And that means mobilizing, protesting, taking to the streets, defending immigrants when these raids happen after Trump takes power.
The protesters say they are followers of communist leader Bob Avakian.
And on New Year's Eve in Los Angeles, the RevComs, along with others, marched through MacArthur Park, an immigrant neighborhood, saying, New Year, no fear. Año Nuevo, sin miedo. Rallying people to stand up against this fascism and join the revolution.
This New Year's Eve, the RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity and Friends came out to MacArthur Park area to declare New Year, no fear. Todos somos ilegales, we are all illegals. No, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America and the system that gave rise to it is illegitimate and rotten. We need and we demand a whole new way to live in a fundamentally different system. We marched around the neighborhood in place where there is a concentration of people from all around the world who have come here because of what this system has done in their own countries, seeking a better life only to be demonized, dehumanized, hounded, hunted, and promised with day one roundups and deportations. No. Today, we not only declare this message, but we are on a mission to move the millions who do not want to see a fascist America and show them there is a force to get with of people and a way to go to work on unlocking the potential to move millions, to make this country ungovernable, to make it so that these fascists cannot implement their fascist program, to defend those immigrants and others, women, LGBT people, black people, and others who are coming under attack, defend their rights and their lives from this. But we cannot simply wait and see what happens and resist after the fact. We can't wait till the inauguration. We need to build momentum now. We're starting with New Year's Eve, ringing in this new year with no fear.
Nueva de vivir.
Un sistema
completamente,
completamente.
Diferente,
diferente.
Y mejor.
Y mejor.
Únanse a nosotros.
Únanse a nosotros.
Únanse al movimiento.
Únanse al movimiento.
De resistencia.
De resistencia.
Para derrotar.
Para derrotar.
Al gobierno racista.
Al gobierno racista.
Al gobierno fascista.
Al gobierno fascista.
De Donald Trump.
De Donald Trump.
Y su movimiento MAGA. Hay que arrancar de la raíz.
Hay que arrancar de la raíz.
Este sistema.
Este sistema.
Y plantar algo nuevo.
Y plantar algo nuevo.
Este sistema debemos derrotar.
Este sistema debemos derrotar.
Ningún ser humano es ilegal.
So we need a lot more of this kind of resistance all across the country. And we're calling on you to be part of it starting now. But we also are announcing that on Inauguration Day, when Donald Trump is being sworn in, people need to give expression to their refusal to accept this. So right now, Rafael is going to read a call that is being issued by the RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity going out across the country, calling for exactly this.
A call from the RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity. Protest on January 20th, Trump's Inauguration Day. No, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. On January 20th, Trump will take the reins of power. This will be Trump MAGA fascism 2.0, now backed by all three branches of government, with the Republican Party fully under his command, and a cabinet ready to go that is full of woman haters, immigrant bashers, war crime supporters, white supremacists, science deniers, climate destroyers, racists, and shameless liars with no respect for the rule of law. The revolutionary leader Bob Avakian has said,
"The answer to this cannot be and must not become an attempt to hide from what is coming or to somehow just get through this fascism or even just individual expressions of outrage about this fascism. Given what is at stake for people in this country and in the world as a whole, there must be active, determined opposition to this fascism with the goal of defeating it. As I have said before, this is not a time for demoralization and despair. It is not a time for accepting this Trump MAGA fascism as legitimate and staying within the confines of how things work under this system, as Democratic Party heads and other mainstream ruling class representatives are urging people to do. It is not a time for turning inward and attempting to take care of self, as the juggernaut of Trump MAGA fascism gains momentum and crushes masses of people. This is a time for reaching out to all the others who feel the same outrage at Trump MAGA fascism, a time for collective action and self-sacrificing struggle for the greater good of defeating this fascism."
What better time for that? What more important and more necessary time than January 20th, the day that Trump is set to be inaugurated? We are calling on you to be part of nonviolent mass actions and expressions of different kinds on that day against this fascism. These actions must announce to the world that a force is forming that is determined to build a movement so massive and powerful that it can create a political crisis profound enough to prevent Trump from implementing his fascist program. And as we stand together against this fascism, as we grow our numbers in a determined movement to defeat it, we must open up the question of what kind of system gave rise to this fascism and all the other horrors we face, and what must be done to get beyond all this. On January 20th, in the face of the obscene fascist celebration, join us in declaring, no, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. This whole system is rotten and illegitimate. We need and we demand a whole new way to live, a fundamentally different system. Get together with people wherever you are. Make plans now. Contact us. There is no time to lose.
We're in the middle of a revolution because I see the face of things to come. Oh, your Constitution, well, my friend, it's gonna have to bend. I'm here to tell you about the destruction of all the evil it will have to end.
One way or the other, this year is going to be extremely heavy. Every single one of us will be tested. And without a doubt, the greatest strength that we have going into this, to understand what we're up against, to understand what must be done about it, to find the courage and the heart to do what must be done, and to get the direction and leadership to know where to go, is the leadership that Bob Avakian is providing. As I said at the beginning of this show, Bob Avakian is like no one else alive on the planet today. This is somebody who is not only the only political leader in this country who is even talking about making a real revolution, he is the author and the architect of a whole new framework for human emancipation. Now, I had the opportunity, together with Andy Z, to do an extended interview with Bob Avakian 2.5 years ago on this show. And in this interview, BA opens up about what formed him, how he became the political leader he is today, how he became the revolutionary thinker, and how he forged a whole new framework for human emancipation. You get to know him in a way that is up close and personal. You get to know him in his hardcore commitment to revolution and to the emancipation of all of humanity. And he takes on and addresses the biggest and most burning questions of the day and questions looking forward to how we'd lead a new society, how we'd carry this revolution forward towards all the way emancipation. These interviews are extraordinary and they hold up. So to all of you who want to know how to look and how to find hope in this new year, go and watch these interviews in full. If you've watched them before, watch them again. If you're new to this show, dive into them. They're here on our channel. Take some time. What we want to do in today's show, as the heart of our show and to launch this new year, is to share the final question that we asked him in that series of interviews. We asked him what sustains him after all these decades of sacrifice, of struggle, of being tested himself, and of advancing the science of revolution. What has sustained him? This is a chance to get to see this leader's heart, to get to know him, and to learn yourself how you're going to find the strength and the direction to do what must be done in the coming very heavy times. So let's watch.
You've been doing this for a long time. You've been leading a revolution. You've been a leader before that. And I think people would want to know a bit more about, even as it's been contained in what you said, what sustains you? What makes you not only not give up, but continue to strive and develop the science and to struggle with the masses of people, to struggle with all of us who are following you and just stating a willingness to struggle with all these masses to get into the one way out for them? And then also maybe say something, even as you've just covered a lot of it, to those people who are in this movement and those people who don't even know about it yet but need to be in this movement, of Where are they going to get that inspiration, that courage, that conviction, that sustenance to really put it all on the line, as you just said, to really live and if necessary, make whatever sacrifice is required to bring about a world where humanity could really flourish?
Well, I mean, as the first part, the most fundamental thing in terms of anyone being sustained is having a scientific approach to reality, being grounded in that and consistently applying a scientific method and approach to understand the contradictions that you're up against, to understand the deeper driving forces of things, to understand that everything we've been talking about, all the horrors, are rooted in this system, and that there is a way to eliminate all this by uprooting and overthrowing this system and replacing it with something much better. So in most, the most important thing and the most basic thing is having that scientific method and approach, but that, it's not something you get once. You have to keep on struggling to apply it in a living way to a constantly changing reality and to deepening your understanding of that scientific method, including learning from your mistakes, the things you did wrong, but also learning from what, the things you did right and what results that produced and then building on that. So that's the most fundamental thing. As far as the, more personal thing, I think it's the same as everybody else who's part of this. You come to see that this world is, first of all, intolerable, and second of all, that it's unnecessary. And once you see those two things, then you can't, not apply yourself to actually bringing about the change that's needed, the fundamental revolutionary change that's needed. It's just, again, the science keeps you grounded, keeps you going through all the difficulties and contradictions. But there's a basic stand that what the people in the world are being put through is completely intolerable and completely unnecessary. I mean, I could talk about some of my own personal development in this, but as I've said before, I consider myself extremely fortunate. I grew up in a city which, on the one hand, was an intellectual center. I grew up in a middle-class family. I lived in the Berkeley Hills, where all the better-off people live, And I, because of that, I was able to be exposed to a lot of, knowledge, but not just knowledge. A lot of intellectual curiosity was encouraged, and I was able to, have a lot of resources to read books and, I used to go to, Shakespeare plays and. I went to plays by Leroy Jones too, and he was called Leroy Jones. Mm-hmm. But I was very encouraged and was interested in a broad array of cultural and intellectual things. And I had the situation where I could do that because of how I grew up. But then, my life changed dramatically. I mean, for one thing, I'll give my parents credit. Partly because my mom was religious, very religious. My dad was religious. My mom was very religious. They sent me to YMCA camp from the time I was 9 years old. And the one thing I was, really good about that, or the one thing that really stands out, is that the YMCA in Berkeley, which is one sponsoring the camp, was integrated. You go to the Y was integrated. You go to the camp that I went to for 5 years, it was integrated. And not just were there, for example, black people at the camp, but they were the cabins that you slept in, the group you were part of was integrated. So, I still remember, I won't say his full name, I remember one dude, Wesley, was in a cabin with me and his cousin, for the years I went there. And, to be honest, when I was a kid, I was kind of spoiled too, coming up, and they didn't like me that much, but I had some interactions with them that made an impression on me, like one time I got really homesick at camp. And I knew that some of these kids didn't like me very much. And, so I kind of, when I think I was 9 or 10, I went and I threw myself down in my bunk in the cabin. And either Wesley or his cousin came in and started comforting me and saying, you're not that bad. You shouldn't feel that bad. People don't hate you that much, and it made me feel better. And it made a deep impression on me, and so did the whole thing of going to the camp. And then I went to middle school or junior high school, as it was called, and, there were very few black people there, but in ninth grade, my best friend, John, was black, and,
you know, we got pretty close. We did some singing stuff together and had a lot of fun together, and that had an impression on me. And then I considered, like, one of the great things about Berkeley was that it only has one public high school. And so when you go to that public high school, you know, you're thrown together with everybody. Like, there was three junior highs when I went there. They're not there now in the same way. But it was Garfield, where I went to, which was overwhelmingly white, some Latinos, and about 25 black people. Then there was Willard and Burbank, where most of the Latinos and, you know, large numbers of black people went, especially Burbank, which was in Southwest Berkeley. And we all came together. You know, at that time, the high school was like three years, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. We all came together. And I still remember my first day of high school. They had an orientation. And, you know, if you came from Garfield, there was all this racist shit. And like, oh, man, you're going to go down to Berkeley High, and there's going to be all these black kids there from Burbank and Willard, and you're going to get your ass kicked and all this kind of stuff. And so, you know, they had an assembly the first day for all the new students. And so I got there late. And I was looking for a seat, and I couldn't find, I mentioned this in my memoir, but, you know, I was looking for a seat, and I couldn't find a seat. And I'm walking all around looking for a seat, and then I went by this one guy who was kind of slouched against the wall like this, and his feet were sticking out. And I said, I don't want to get into any shit here. So I walked very gingerly around him. And as I did, he turned to me and said, "Hey, man, you stepped on my dogs." I didn't step on his feet at all, just to be clear. I said, "No, I didn't." He said, "Yes, you did, man. You stepped on my dogs." And then that was all there was to it. Now, this dude, whose name was Odell, he and I became friends later on. We were in a singing group together when I was a senior in high school. You know, I used to see him out in the hallway, you know, because he didn't go to class all that much. But, you know, he was creative. So I'd see him out in the hallway when I'm going to class, you know, and I'd say, "Hey, Odell, what are you doing, man? How come you're not in class?" He'd say, "I'm writing songs." So, you know, then he'd be writing songs for our group, you know. I remember he had one that was called "Chuck is Good for You." It was all about, you know, eating good food was good for you. But so, you know, that was Odell, you know, and you go through changes. At first it's like, "You stepped on my dogs." And then we're in a singing group together and they're telling me, "Hey, man, step back here a little bit. We don't want your white ass sticking out too much when we're doing our routines." So this is all part of the, you know, the really great experience you have. You know, I had many experiences like this. I made a lot of friends. I didn't make friends to make a point. I made friends because I liked people. You know, some of them were white. Some of them were Japanese. Some of them were Latino. A number of them were black. But they were people I liked. I got to know them in sports. I got to know them in singing class and this kind of thing. They became my friends. You know what? Friends are people in your heart, okay? Mm-hmm. I don't mean something superficial. You know, "Oh, I got a bunch of black friends." I mean, these are people that are in your heart, okay? These people that, you know, you go to their house and they come to your house and you talk all kinds of shit with each other about what's going on, you know, and you talk on the phone back in those days. And I don't know what the fuck we talked about, but we talk about it for hours. You know, so these are people in your heart. And then you see what people are being put through. Just, you know, the daily shit and the bigger shit. And, you know, my mom always taught me, you know, as a good Christian, that you should care about other people. That's the kind of Christianity she was about. You should care about other people. So, I cared about my friends, not just because my mom told me to, although that had an influence on me, but I cared about my friends because they were here. These are my friends, and you're doing all this shit. Plus, I love the culture they were part of. I love being in a singing group. I mean, I could get into old stories about that. You know, it was a lot of fun. You know, I can remember, I guess I am going to tell a story. I remember one time we went to Live Oak Park, which is the main park in, one of the main parks in Berkeley, and I could tell more stories about that, but we don't have time for that. And we were going to do, our group was going to do sing for a dance there. And we're walking, you know, past the basketball courts, getting ready to go into the auditorium to do the singing. And a friend, and our lead singer was my friend Sam. And a friend of his was playing basketball, and he's coming over to get a drink of water. And he says, "Sam, what the f*** are you doing here?" He said, "Well, I'm here to sing with my group." "You can't sing, Sam." "Yeah, I can, man." So then they had to do a spaniel song. They had to have a sing-off. Guy challenged Sam to sing. So they did a verse and a half, and the other guy gave up because Sam could really sing.
So, you know, this was all, you know, this, I love this. This was all part of, like, you know, something that, you know, just, you know, made my life rich. And then you're going to tell me that you're going to do this and that to my friends. And then you're going to do this and that to all these other people that are just like my friends. I mean, Sam took me out to his house. We went out to East Oakland. He lived right at the edge of East Oakland, right by 98th Avenue, I think it is. And in those days, San Leandro was right next to East Oakland. And you didn't go in San Leandro if you were black back in those days. And there was a creek and a fence right by where Sam lived. And that was the dividing line. You know, you didn't go into San Leandro. Here, my friend Sam, he couldn't go into San Leandro. It was right across the creek because he'd get jumped on. So I'm saying, what kind of f-ing world is this? So that was a big thing to me, you know. And then, you know, the civil rights movement was jumping off. And then, you know, more militant and revolutionary forces like the Black Panther Party came forward. And I was in college at that time. You know, I had recovered from a serious illness, and I had an ambition. I wanted to learn a whole bunch of languages. I wanted to be a Renaissance man, you know, be able to speak at least 5 or 6 languages and read literature in all these different languages, you know. And I was taking all kinds of literature courses, and I had a favorite professor who was Italian, you know, and all this kind of stuff. I was, you know, I was enjoying my time, but I also was still thinking about all these big things going on. And then the Black Panther Party came along. You know, and I was devastated by the death of Malcolm X, like a lot of people were, millions and millions of people, and more than that around the world. And the Black Panther Party came along, and, you know, well, I could go back, you know, just since you asked me this question, I'm going to get into it. You know, so I mentioned my friend Billy, you know, so about when I was still in college, but just, you know, maybe about 1965 or something, I was down at this rec center in Southwest Berkeley. It used to be called the Grove Rec Center, but it's not called Grove anymore. But I was down there, and my friend Billy was playing basketball. He was a great basketball player. And then, you know, after they finished up, he introduced me to this dude named Weasel, whose nickname was Weasel. And they'd played against each other in high school. You know, Weasel went to McClyman's High School in West Oakland, and Billy went to Berkeley High, and they played a great game. But unfortunately, McClyman's won, and our high school that Billy played for lost by 1 point in overtime. And it was a bitter thing, but they were friends, Billy and Weasel. So Billy and I talked a while, and then he introduced me to Weasel, and Weasel and I started talking. And, you know, Weasel was interested, as I was, in all this going on. So, you know, we kept on talking, and then he asked me to give him a ride home. So I gave him a ride home. We went over to his house, and we stayed up till 2 o'clock in the morning drinking coffee and talking with his mom, as well as him, of course. You know, the three of us talking about what was going on with black people in America and all the shit this imperialist ruling class was doing in Vietnam and the Congo and all this kind of stuff. I still remember that very vividly, this staying up till 2 in the morning. And then I hung out with Weasel for a while. And then one day he said to me, you know, there's just going to be this cultural program going on at the community college in Oakland. I think it's called Merit now. And so I said, you know, he said, why don't you come on down there? It's an Afro-American cultural program. So I went down there, and, you know, I was, I think, one of 2 white people in the audience, but that was fine. And Bobby Seale turned out to be the MC. And he was hilarious. I mean, he could do great impressions of all kinds of people. He did an impression of Bill Cosby back in the day. He was down on Bill Cosby for doing I Spy, being a CIA agent, and he was mocking Bill Cosby, imitated John Kennedy, all this kind of shit. And I thought, you know, he was great, you know, as an MC of this program. And so then the program ended, and I'm starting to leave, and this guy comes up to me, and he says, who are you, Socrates? And I said, no. And then it turned out it was Huey Newton. And then we started having a discussion about what's going on with black people, black liberation, revolution. And he said to me, you know, are you part of the CP? Because he's trying to figure out why I was there. First, he wanted to know if I was Socrates. Then he wanted to know if I was in the CP. Are you in the Communist Party? And I said, no. He said, that's good. They're not revolutionary. Are you in Progressive Labor Party? I said, no. He said, that's good. They pretend to be revolutionary, but they're not revolutionary either. And then we got into a discussion, and he was running down about how revolution could succeed, especially for black people in America, because although they might be a minority in America, the at least two-thirds, maybe three-fourths of the world was with them. So it's possible they could make revolution here. And that was, you know, somewhat naive. It wasn't a fully developed scientific approach. But it made an impression on me, and this whole discussion made an impression on me. And then I was working at Ramparts magazine, and Eldridge Cleaver got out of prison on the basis of getting a job at Ramparts. So we were talking all the time, and I used to go over to his house, and as I mentioned, I talked to him on the phone sometime. And, you know, and this just got me, you know, much deeper into understanding that we needed a revolution. And I just bring it to a close by saying none of the things that I've mentioned that propelled me in this direction have gotten better. It's not that, you know, yeah, there's more black middle class, there's more women able to do this and that, but these terrible forms of oppression, not just to people, you know, the whole Vietnam War thing, mm-hmm. all the atrocities that you learned about, I took that war very seriously. I took time to make up my mind. When I was in the free speech movement, we had a sit-in in the administration building for a couple of days and finally won our demands. But all the leaders of it, or almost all of them, were against the Vietnam War. And I remember Mario Savio, the main leader, got up and talked about what the administration was doing against us was the same type of thing that the government of our government was doing in Vietnam. And I kind of didn't like that because I wasn't sure, you know, how I felt about Vietnam. But I was studying. I was going into the library and I was reading up on all the different, you know, things that were being analyses about Vietnam, and I was reading about the commission that was set up to oversee the, you know, the situation in Vietnam, International Commission, and they were reporting that it was the U.S. side that was violating all the agreements. You know, these kind of things are going around in my mind, you know, and I'm thinking and studying and everything. And then, as I've said a number of times, I woke up in you know, the spring of 1965. Got the newspaper, and here's this great big article about Selma, Alabama, and the Pettus Bridge and the attack on the civil rights marchers, and that was it for me. I said, you know, how in the f*** can these people, this government that claims it's bringing freedom to the people of Vietnam and getting rid of these terrible communist tyrants, how in the f*** can they be bringing freedom to the people in Vietnam? Why would they even be trying to do that when look what they're doing in this country and look what the government is allowing to go on right here? And that was it for me. So, you know, all these things came together, but none of this has gotten better. You know, if anything, it's gotten worse. The environment, the whole thing of the environment was just starting, the environmental danger and crisis was just beginning to be recognized at that time. Some people saw where things were headed. But it's gotten obviously worse over decades, and it's accelerating all the time. And, you know, the danger of nuclear war, all these things have not gotten better. And, the people that I care about, that I've learned about, not just the people I grew up with, but the people around the world that I've learned to care about, when I've learned about their situation, to me, for me to give up would be betraying all those people. It'd be like turning your back on your best friends. So it's fundamentally the science that's the foundation, and that, you know, you need to keep deepening and applying and grasping and learning, or else you will go off course. But there's also a thing that I think everybody who gets into this revolution becomes, you know, feels, that right here you feel like what people are being put through, you just can't go along with it. You just can't stand by and watch it happen. You can't live with yourself if you don't do everything you can, especially when you know it's unnecessary and a better world actually is possible. You can't give up. Yes, you can get discouraged. You know, when there's defeats, when there's setbacks, big ones, you know, gigantic ones, like when China went off the socialist road, was taken off the socialist road, and the revolution was betrayed there, and capitalism was restored, and it's emerged as an imperialist power instead of a revolutionary stronghold for the people of the world. Those things are discouraging, but you bear down with the science, and you keep in your heart why you got into this in the first place, and what it is you're in this for. And that's why I don't give up. So that's what I would say about that.
Incredible clip, Sansara, and that comes from the interview titled Up Close and Personal with Bob Avakian, Heart and Soul and Hardcore for Revolution. And that's exactly what that clip was. And, you know, this is really a different kind of leader, someone people need to know about and follow.
Yeah, Bob Avakian's voice, his leadership needs to be known by millions and millions, especially in this very challenging time. You know, we've talked in the show today about the need to unite millions to stand up against and defeat this Trump MAGA fascism. We've talked about the need to get to the root of this fascism and all the other horrors that you spoke about at the beginning of the show that Bob Avakian was just speaking about, through making an actual revolution to overthrow this system and bring about a whole different way to live, a fundamentally different system. One of the things that Bob Avakian has been doing for the last year is providing just unparalleled, scientific, visionary, farsighted, and right down on the ground, hitting you where you live, leadership and struggle through his social media at Bob Avakian Official. This is a platform that needs to be known and followed by thousands, tens of thousands, and millions in this new year. And so we're really happy to say thank you and announce that we met our end of the year fundraising goal to raise $50,000 to be projecting Bob Avakian's social media platform through online advertising and promotion on the ground. This makes a huge difference. We actually exceeded the goal. We made it to $53,000. So if you are part of donating, part of raising funds, we want to really let you know it matters what you did. And we want to keep that momentum going into this new year because it really is going to make all the difference. So before we close out, I want to read just one of the statements from somebody who donated. This is a Christian man, a Black man who is a friend of Revolution Books. He says, "Very few people are trying to fight against fundamental corruption and perversion, the root of this country. I am not a communist, but a Christian. I may disagree with some or all of what Bob Avakian is saying, but I have to support him because he's really fighting against the system, but most of us are not. We're accepting passively what this system does and says. My example is Gaza today, which is pure evil and genocide that this system is supporting. The Israelis could not do this without U.S. support." So this is from somebody who has been really inspired by and moved by Bob Avakian's voice and wants to see others be able to experience it as well, and knows that that would make a difference, even as he's got his own differences and is learning more. It's a good example. We want to call on you to keep spreading Bob Avakian's social media at Bob Avakian Official, and let's really keep this momentum going in the new year. And that brings us to the end of another show here at the Michael Slate Show. I'd like to thank Andy Z and everybody at the Revolution Nothing Less Show, my assistant producer, Henry Carson, and all of you for tuning in. And again, check out the RevComs on YouTube at youtube.com/TheRevComs and follow at Bob Avakian Official on all your social media platforms. And remember, the problem is not human nature, it is the nature of the system. Through a real revolution, a better world is possible. My name is Sansara Taylor. I'll talk to you again next week.
Set out to do. Stand.
There's a cross for you to bear.
Things to go through if you're going anywhere.
Ooh.
Stand for the things you know alright. It's the truth that the truth makes them so alive. Stand.
All the things you want are real.
You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
Stand
and stand.
Stand,
stand.
Stand. You've been sitting too long.
There's a permanent crease in your right and wrong. Stand.
There's a midget standing tall,
and a giant beside him about to fall.
Mind if you want to be.